Guys, somebody's at the door. Nick, would you mind?
No, can you go?
Send the producer, please. Hey, can you send the sound guy?
Come on.
Would you? Okay, hold on, man.
He's at the door. It's rude.
Guys, you're not going to believe this. Check this out.
What did you find?
Hello. Look at this. Mr. Jason Evans is back. All right. The two deans are in the room, right?
Hi.
Hi, Jason Evans. We're jumping right in, baby, because we got to jump in because we just scratched the surface with you. And I've got to say, if I haven't listened to your interview 10 times, I haven't listened to it at all.
That's weird.
I'm jealous because I'll tell you why, because his voice sounds better than mine.
I'm telling you, it is.
I'm a little jealous.
Well, I appreciate that.
Okay, I changed my shirt 3 times today. I put on different shoes. I redid my hair. I feel like I got this boy crush thing going on. But
wow.
To translate that into like academic respect, I'm just watering it. I'm simmering it to the...
I'll take it.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Great interview last time. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you. This is fun.
Yeah.
The best thing I'll do today, probably.
Awesome.
Well, I would imagine you have so much responsibility on you.
Yeah.
That this is maybe a break from that, but
it
you
is.
Still get to keep your foot in the water.
Yeah. The truth is, though, I have such a ton of help with everything that we're trying to do in the college. I'm very blessed in that way. And I don't know how I can do it without it, really.
He's like so politically correct. God, I want to kiss you or slap you at the same time.
It's true, though.
Everything he says is perfect.
Well, the thing is, I walked into a situation where so much of the leadership at Johnson & Wales has been at Johnson & Wales for a really long time, including as students. And so they've seen the university from so many different perspectives.
Right.
And that means they really know how it works.
That's the good side.
Yeah.
There's got to be
a
flip to that coin as well.
There is. There's a lot of conversations that start with, well, we used to, and
right.
I got to tell you, as a relatively new dean, I spend a lot of time trying to pick apart why we stopped doing certain things and whether it's now time to bring some of those things back. And frankly, some of them are still sort of mysterious as to why they ever stopped in the first place.
Well, like a trend. Fashions come back often. You could deconstruct and then reconstruct them and tweak them a bit. But just because it happened doesn't mean it's not relevant and can't be relevant again.
That's
correct?
Right. So we actually do that quite a lot. Repackaging good ideas for the modern student, for the modern enrollment context, which is clearly different than it has been in the last 10, 20 years. I mean, we're all, universities across the Northeast are cannibalizing each other.
Right.
And hunting for students. And so the approach, you just have to harvest the good of what you used to do and use it again.
Nick and I were just at a career fair, students in Boston, Mass., downtown Boston, right? Yep. Nick, there had to be a lot of, there were how many booths there of universities now?
Yeah.
Trying to poach students from each other in some ways. 60 booths? We were booth 59.
Were we?
Yeah, 59.
Or 60.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, there was I'd say 100. I'd say closer to 100. There were almost 500 kids, and I think the weather, it was rainy, and I think the turnout was a little less than what anticipated.
Sure.
Jason, the universities were falling over each other to get people to
come. Of course.
Oh, it was crazy.
But the good news is that in those environments, Johnson & Wales has a different starting point because of its reputation and because of its incredibly unique programming. I mean, we just do very different things in academics than most other institutions. So we at least have a starting point, and that's been, I think, the most welcome different thing in this job versus my last job, which is when I pick up the phone to a potential partner, a potential donor, I don't have to spend most of the call explaining who we are and what we do. So we're a known quantity.
Gotcha.
And that's worth its weight in gold.
I'm just confused because I thought you had a partner.
Well, Lord Almighty, if I had to start that process over again, I assure you I'd have to start from scratch and explain who I am.
Let me just take you on a little nostalgia.
Yeah.
Things that you said.
Yes.
That resonated with me last time.
Okay.
Regarding your partner.
I appreciate that.
Best decision I've ever made. That's a direct quote.
No question about it. And in fact, today is the anniversary of the day that we met.
Oh, that's awesome.
18 years ago.
Nicholas, get that bell, please.
It's right. It is, they can't find the bell now. It's the most consequential day of my life.
You also said, love of your life.
Yeah.
You also talked about how he is infinitely better looking than you.
Yeah.
That's in quotes, guys.
Absolutely.
See, it's the humility. See how he plays that? He knows just how to say the right thing. I love this guy. But of course, you then preface that with your favorite topic is to talk about yourself.
Oh, totally.
As is mine. And yeah. There's no other voice you'd like to hear other than your own.
Yeah, no, my humility is legitimate and genuine, but it's balanced with a fairly healthy sense of efficacy, right? I know what I offer and bring to the table, but I think where people miss the boat sometimes is they recognize that, but then they don't feel that sense of responsibility to package that together and actually use it toward things that matter. And that's what drives me every day is that I do have a sense that there are some things that I'm good at. And
name three of them.
Top
three.
I think that once I assess a situation and determine what's right and what's wrong, I am pretty effective at getting people to understand my point of view. And so I'm compelling, I think, is the way to just sort of put that all together as a skill. So long as I'm confident, though, that I'm right about something. But I also put the requisite time in to make sure I've thought about something the right way. And you still make mistakes, for sure. So I would say that I'm compelling.
One.
Number two, I'm incredibly introspective. I don't make a decision. I don't think about a conversation I'm going to have without really thinking about it. And understanding the consequences, not only for myself, but by everybody who's going to be impacted by it. That makes leadership really hard sometimes because it can be paralyzing, right? You find yourself stuck in the mud because you're afraid to pull the trigger given the consequences. Yeah. But I'm very introspective.
This is that synthesizing.
Yeah,
right?
It is.
Taking all of this and kind of then...
It is.
Making decisions based on it.
So, number three, this comes from my raisins, my upbringing, I suppose.
That's next on the agenda.
I think I'm pretty funny. I was raised by people who had senses of humor because they didn't take themselves terribly seriously because they didn't have the luxury of taking themselves seriously.
Working on a farm, right?
In a coal mine. This is every day is sort of about survival. And so the little stuff can't matter. Hmm. If I have sort of a cultural train wreck with modernity every day, it's on this. It's people who, for whatever reason, are taking themselves very, very seriously, which means when they meet with conflict or something doesn't go their way, they're fragile and they just fall apart because everything about themselves rests on this one thing, right? So I would say that I bring humor
so three to situations. Humor,
yeah.
Great. I think there's a long laundry list there. And I'm sure on the flip side, there's probably a laundry list as well.
Oh, good Lord.
So let me ask you this. What are three things maybe you don't like about yourself or that you'd change or you're looking to evolve with?
Yeah.
No. You can jump in, Nick. You do have a voice.
Are you gonna? I'm sorry, Nick. Do you want to say something now?
No, good. Don't be mad. Love you.
The things that I would... Yeah, I mean, you might as well say something now because I'm going to need a couple of minutes to come up with the things I don't like about myself.
Very good.
No, I'm kidding. Okay. I really don't need a couple of minutes to come up with those things.
Good one.
I don't know. I because of the introspective part probably makes me a worrier.
Okay.
And so I do actually in my quiet downtime, I'm typically spending that time consumed by something.
Mm-hmm.
I maybe wish that weren't the case.
Yep.
I do have a hard time relaxing. I feel... bad relaxing sometimes. And so hanging out on the couch on a weekend day or something, I really am looking around and for, you know, things to clean and stuff.
There's always Jeopardy.
There's right? True. Yeah. There is always Jeopardy.
Yep.
And I would say that there have been times where my sense of my ability to communicate or how compelling I can be has made me overconfident, and I've misread a room, or I've stepped in it a little bit. So I probably need to. Sometimes I need to trail that back a little bit.
I appreciate your honesty and transparency, Nick. You're up.
Hi, Nick.
Hi, Nick. I'm going to make it. I got some work to do on this one. Damage control.
Go ahead,
buddy. Go ahead.
I'm good. You're doing a great job.
You're
go ahead.
Such a lord.
No, you right? caught me off guard. I mean, okay. You can't just put me on the spot like that.
All right.
You're doing fine, solo. Okay. Go ahead. Keep flying.
Thank you. Keep flying. Hi, this is Hospitable with Dean and Dean.
There you go.
Jason, I thought we'd go to, well, we already started on one of the directions I hope to go, and we had talked about going with this today.
Yeah.
Because this is only chapter two, buddy.
Okay.
That's it. We're going to need you back. I see a four-part series, at least four.
Excellent.
Okay. And thank you for following up. And within a month, you said.
Yes.
You were here, committed, boom.
Yeah. I'm here.
Man of his word.
I do what I say.
Add that as number four.
Number four.
Okay, good.
I do what I say.
Yeah. So, we got to talk about CFIT, man. What happened at the anniversary, the 50th?
Yeah, because it was fabulous.
Okay,
and my husband actually figures into this story a little bit.
Damn it,
we were both wearing tuxes that night, and there are people, as you might imagine, who aren't terribly observant, who think he's me. We both have beards. That's where the similarity stops.
Uh-huh.
The number of conversations that he had that night as the dean of CFIT.
I love it.
Which takes a lot of pressure off me because I'm off having my own conversations. So there were sort of two of us in the room that evening. It was awesome.
How tall is he? Because you're 6'4". I believe
he's over six.
Wow.
Yeah.
Two bears in the room there. Tall bears.
Over six. Okay. But it was a fabulous evening. Most important, we raised a lot of money.
How much? Can you say here? Is that appropriate?
Yeah, I can. So if you total up everything, including the in-kind and the cash donations, we're over 100,000. So 60,000 or so of that will go directly to scholarships and support of student travel and other experiential learning opportunities.
That's great.
Yeah, and we wouldn't have done that without, we had sponsors really footing the bill for most of the materials we needed that evening, including all of our liquor.
Three bars, I believe you said.
There were three bars. And, you know, Jacques was there and Emeril was there and Chris Cosentino and all of these guys. And so they were sort of slammed all night with people wanting time with them. But they were so gracious with their time with students. We had about 50 student volunteers in the room.
Who were down 10, because I think you said you had 60 on tap.
Yeah,
originally.
It was 50 to 60.
Yeah.
But they were, I mean, they had the time of their lives. And what I loved was that you had these 20-somethings who actually knew who these people in the room were.
Right.
And they were so excited to meet them. I wasn't like that in college. I mean, I majored in economics. Who were my professional heroes?
In agriculture, I believe, yes.
Econ undergrad and then ag econ in graduate school. But they know who the people are in their field. And I think that's really saying something about the passion they come in with when they come to Johnson Wales.
I remember you saying for the guests, we had Emeril Lagasse was on tap. And tell me if they ended up showing up.
Yep.
You had Jacques Pepin, who also had some artwork. Didn't know he was an artist, but I guess being a chef is an artist, so I'm not surprised.
We sold his original painting. He painted the evening's menu. That was one of the fundraisers. That sold for $6,000.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Nick, can you bring me and show it to me at your house? Because I know you did, right?
No.
You know, I tell you what I'll do. The next time I come to see you guys, I'll bring you Jacques-signed prints
That'd be awesome.
Of that painting.
Was that like the invitations to the... We were going to get for the... That's right. You couldn't get us an invitation.
I couldn't.
CFIT 50th.
So we actually got a little conservative and shut that down pretty quick because of expected headcount.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of people that maybe 20 people who bought tickets who didn't show because the evening was so bad weather-wise.
That's right. It was that night, huh?
It was really rainy and awful. And so the drive-in from New York City took Jacques Torres, who's a world-class chocolatier, like 7 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But he showed up and was there for the last hour or so and had a heck of a time.
One word for you. Train. Hello.
Well,
come on.
I know, but I think that once you achieve maybe perhaps a certain level of celebrity, you maybe don't hop on the train.
Yeah. Gotcha. Chris Cosentino,
Lorena Garcia.
Lorena Garcia.
Yep. And Jacques Torres and then, you know, a handful of others dotted between. There were others in the audience whose companies had sponsored the event, so very much heads of industry,
right,
but not necessarily the television celebrities that would be ubiquitously recognized.
Hey, in today's world, right? It's always been, even in not today's world. You get a celebrity, you get somebody name recognized, it kind of gives value. It gives a value statement, or people can decide to go, okay, it's a touch point to go, oh, this is the caliber of a product.
That's, well, right? I mean, we're a celebrity society. What's different about today's celebrity society is that sometimes it doesn't actually take much to become a celebrity because of social media. But these folks, I think are what our students appreciate is that all of them got to where they got the hard way. I mean, they were schlepping in kitchens and hotels and hospitality operations and cruise lines and ultimately found the right break or the right opportunity. So that's a life lesson, right? That you just don't know where life's going to take you, but never shut the window on an opportunity.
I'm going to challenge you a bit on it doesn't take much with social media. Yeah. I would disagree. Okay.
I get where you're coming from.
Okay,
for
ahead.
Sure.
Tell me where I'm coming from. No, read my mind.
In saying that, I'm accepting you're absolutely right. It takes a type of work and persistence that I know nothing about. And so
there you go.
I'm automatically selling it short. So flaw number four.
Okay.
There are lots of things about modern society because it's not part of my life, I accept it as less than valuable.
That's common, though. That's common.
I think so.
With everybody, right? I don't think that's so.
I think so. Right.
So prior to this job, you were the ambassador to what country again?
Right. No, that would be awesome. My dream retirement job is actually to go back home and be governor of West Virginia.
We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk. It's now a good time to jump in, and we want to get to know you a little bit.
My gubernatorial campaign.
Are you joking, or is this something you've really got penciled in somewhere?
It's penciled into my head and because I just love that place so much and it needs help and it needs a lot of brains.
Well, you penciled it. Here's a marker.
Yeah.
Right there.
There you go.
Okay. I think it's worth putting it
I appreciate that.
On paper. So let's talk about the boy. First of all, are we done with CFIT? Did you paint a good picture for us?
Did you give
us a pretty good idea of that night and anything
rock
else
and
stand out at you that was important or memorable?
It was awesome. I mean, I don't want to do it again next week. that was a several months worth of work. But we did what we intended to do. People had a good time. And I think we built relationships that will fruit even into the future.
Give us an example of that, like a relationship that you built and how those tie into each other.
So there would, not naming names, but there were people in the audience that came forward with, donations that night, either just straight donation or through the silent auction or through the live auctions we were doing that maybe weren't on our radar in the past. I mean, we'd had some connection to them as a university, but weren't in our radar. And so I think them showing up and really putting their money where their mouth was that evening said that they believe in what we do. They're excited about what we do. So that's a lot of future conversations.
Here are the things we have on tap for you today. One was talk about CFIT. The other was get to know you a little bit better, which is next on tap here.
Yep.
But I think for the next episode, I think the third really is going to be the role of a dean and what a dean does, because as one of the things I said before we left last time, there's something in the air.
Yeah.
And although it feels different. Something's happening in culinary. There's a movement. There's an excitement. There's an energy.
Thank you.
And it's all been since you came on board. But we don't know what I don't know what a dean does.
Well, just as a quick preview to episode three, then it's a lot about emailing.
Which sucks.
How many emails do you get a day, Jason, in a typical day?
On a typical
good
day.
Question.
200?
Are you serious?
Yeah, by the time you get to like 240, 250, you really feel it.
Yeah.
Like you're just super stressed about it because I don't let them go unresponded. Like I'm not leaving. I'm not stopping work until, you get to that time of day where, hey, I'm home and done.
Right.
But up until that time, if there's something in my inbox, I can't let it go because I will dwell on it.
That's good quality. Yeah, absolutely.
But it drives you crazy, though.
It does, but I think, I'm sort of the same way. The first thing I do in the morning when I wake up is check my emails.
Yep.
When I'm, make my coffee and I'm, I've got maybe 15, 20 minutes before I have to leave for work. And I feel the same guilt if I don't respond.
I think it's good.
I think it's... I feel bad. I feel
guilty. Me too. It's how the trains run.
So
imagine the 40-year-ago equivalent of that, of getting 200 calls a day and not responding to any of them.
Right.
What does that do for you?
Producer Brian Lavin.
The mail 141,000.
Does that do anything?
So is that keeping track of everything that you've...
That's unread.
Why do you have...
What is the number, Brian? Jump in here. What is the number, dude? Okay, you have 100. He just saves them and doesn't delete them, right?
So these are emails from like Expedia.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Okay. Right? Petco, that kind of stuff. Well, not to burst your bubble, but you might want to check your spam folder because I'm still waiting for a reply from 3 days ago. Just saying. I'm just saying.
Now, if you're sending me a reminder,
it was a reminder.
Such that we're
it
both on the same okay. page, yeah, that one's probably going to get by me a little
good.
Bit.
He's good.
Yeah. So, yeah. Jason, tell me a very interesting backstory you have.
Yeah.
So why don't could you fill us in on your childhood and
sure.
like how it all the origin story of Jason Evans?
Yeah. So Southern West Virginia on a family farm. My dad was actually a construction worker. The farm had been in the family, so Dad would get home from a construction job and not be done. Right, there's a lot to do in the evening. And as a kid, Dad was not a great mentor. When I'm out trying to do things with him, he just needs to get it done. So he's not the guy that's going to take the time to actually teach me how to do something and to be patient with me to get it done. So I developed just this real aversion to being out on the farm with my dad. It wasn't a comfortable position for me. So I was a mama's boy. And if it was an evening or a Saturday or a summer day, I much preferred being in the kitchen with mom. That changed over time because my dad and I eventually found something that we both loved very much and both loved doing together, which was the cattle business. I mean, I fell in love with it and I credit him with that because he gave me my first animal. And
which was
a cow.
Okay.
And I, you know, with
just,
whatever.
Just curious. It's a farm.
Whatever money I made from a cow. But whatever money I made from owning her, I reinvested back into new cattle. And eventually, by the time I went to college, I had my own little herd. I was showing cattle. So it was something for the first time, I think he was proud of something that I was doing. I was always good at school. I didn't register with him very much because it wasn't tangible, right? I wasn't creating something. I wasn't building something. It didn't look like hard work. And my dad's litmus test for whether he liked somebody or not was always how hard they worked.
Right.
And I grew up thinking, God, how cold that is and how I'm at the receiving end of that now, you know? I totally get it now.
Yeah,
I'm completely my father. So I credit developing an interest in the cattle on the farm with not only the great relationship that I grew into with my dad as an adult, but with the rest of my career. I mean, I loved it so much that I wanted to incorporate agriculture into my academic pursuits,
right. Yeah.
Which then set me up for being in the classroom as a professor, which then set me up for leadership opportunities. I credit my cow
right
with all of those things.
Well, so the biggest question, I think, about that very important, significant, poignant story is how many are in a herd? What makes a herd?
Well, there's no size designation, but in West Virginia, you know, because West Virginia is so hilly, there's not a lot of flat expanses. You really can't have a lot of animals grazing at any given time. At our biggest, we had, 40 animals who had a calf every year. And so very, very small relative to the larger beef system.
Is your dad still alive?
He's not. So Dad died in actually tragically on my birthday in 2018.
And, which is?
May 3rd.
Okay.
May the 3rd. So Dad's been dead now. Well, it's 5 years, which is hard to believe. Mom's still alive on the farm. And my sister and her family still live on the farm, too.
I find it interesting how he refers to his parents, as if they're our parents.
Yeah, that's right.
The language you use. I find that very unusual. I would not do that.
I think that's a mid-Atlantic or southern
thing. I think
thing.
So, yeah.
Do you do that, Nick?
I say my mother.
Yeah, my mother. What about you, Brian? Do you say your adopted family or what?
I don't know.
That's an important point. Interesting that you call that out because where I'm from, that's how people would describe their family. And I think it's because, in part maybe, historically people who come from that part of the world don't leave that part of the world. And rarely would they leave their tiny communities. And so if they're speaking with somebody about their family, they're speaking to family about their family. even if they're not related by blood, right? This is part of their community. So it's all much more familial.
Yeah.
And I think that comes at least in part from what I was talking about earlier. This is Central Appalachia, where you're in a coal mine, and certainly you're oppressed by coal companies and just the structure of that economy. If you don't depend on each other,
right,
you won't make it. Mm-hmm. And so everybody is family. There's no secrets. There's nothing sacred. And I really appreciated that about my family. Like, I felt part of the sort of the business unit of the family.
Yeah.
We talked about money. We talked about hardship. We talked about everything. So there's just a little more of a casualness about it, because I think we feel like we're always around family.
Well, I think connecting, you can, I'm telling you, this is a theme, Nick. Have you heard this? This is a theme Jason comes up with. When he talked about students, he gave students this inclusion in the credit for things. He talked about his faculty the last time you were here, about how they really lift you up in areas maybe you're not as strong. That
sure.
Maybe because you're not a trained chef, this is something that's on your mind. It's a topic that's we're going to go into. Because I and only with you be present, Nick. But,
right.
But I I'm hearing this theme coming up.
Yeah.
From you, which I can connect the dots now.
I appreciate. And actually, I have not thought about it that way, but I'd like to think that you're absolutely right. That
of course.
I'm introspective enough to know that nothing I have ever done have I ever done alone.
Right.
And everything that I am is because, even though, again, it wasn't perfect and it was tough being around my dad.
Right.
What he did and who he was set a model for me, and I just don't know what I would be without it.
So did you make peace with your dad with these
totally.
Issues?
Totally. No, dad, by the time dad died, he was incredibly proud. We were buddies. Like he talked to me for solace, I think, when he was frustrated increasingly with my mom. Mm-hmm. I think he appreciated the fact that even though we had very, very different careers, dad was always the boss on the job. And so I took a lot of great advice from my dad as my career was changing and as I was growing and being promoted into these leadership positions that frankly were terrifying to me.
Yeah.
And so I went to him, I think, for confidence that I can do it. And what did you do in certain situations? So we were super close.
That's cool. Guys, Jason, you have to forgive me, but I have a meeting that I cannot miss.
Fine.
So I have to,
Nick.
Say goodbye, and I'm looking forward to part three. Seriously,
about emails.
Yeah. So again, forgive me, guys.
No problem.
We'll miss you. We understand. Priorities are priorities. Show's not going to be anything without you, man. I'm sure, disappointed.
I'm sure you're not going to have a problem.
No. I'm serious.
Filling in
I'm
the time.
Disappointed.
Yeah. Vanity. Vanity's a sin.
All right. Love you, Nick. I don't know, Nick Jason. If you should continue the show or not? Just let's take a pause here for a minute.
Of course.
Okay. All right. See you later, Nick. Good luck. Okay. Hold on. Give me 2 seconds. Hold on. Do you hear the click? Okay. Oh! Finally, he's gone. Hey, it's Hospitable with Dean. And my guest today is Jason Evans. So, God, I thought he'd never leave.
I knew you were going to say something like that.
Actually, I thought he was going to have to go to this very secret, very special meeting, right? I'm like, are you guys serious? We got Jason Evans coming in today. They're like, we kind of were told we had to go to this meeting.
Yeah.
I'm like, don't they know this is podcast time?
Well,
hello?
I know.
So then I thought it was going to be just with Brian, and I was going to play that one up. I was going to be the hospital with Dean and Brian's show. Ooh, let me tell you, that would have been fun fodder for next week. So, Jason, I'm going to continue the conversation with you, if that's okay.
Great.
Okay, what time are you here until? How much time do we have with you left?
Oh, I don't even know what time it is.
It's like 1:05.
Okay, so I have a little time.
Okay, good. Out of respect for Nick, I won't go into any other subject matters, but I want to continue to learn a little bit about you because I think it's important. I think this stuff shapes who we are as educators, who we are as men as we go into this next chapter of our lives, who we are as partners to people that we love. I don't know why this is sensitive for me. It's emotional for me, honest.
Yeah.
Because your presence and how you portray yourself, and I joked about it a bit when you walked into the Sons of Italy Hall, you know, like you own the place. I think could be misread.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could be perceived as arrogant.
For sure.
I think it's perceived as a know-it-all and somebody that is, I'm just,
you're right.
Yeah, and I'm curious how much that hurts you. I know you did mention it as maybe number three or one of the things, a challenge for you, but.
It just means that I pair that with being introspective. And I think I have a sense if I'm coming off that way, especially taking a job like this where nobody knows me. They don't even know me from industry. Like they've never run into me before in their professional networks because I'm coming from a completely different area, right?
Yeah.
So what I do is if I really have a sense that that's how I'm being read, then I double down on really getting to know those people or that person and their needs. But it's also why I am so upfront about all of the help that I have and all of the people who have turned me into something.
Yes.
It's almost kind of a balance on what you suggested that yes, I kind of walk around with a confidence and it comes off in the way that I say
it. But you're the boss. And if you didn't, I think people smell that out too. And it could be used against you. I think you almost got to fake it till you make it if you're not feeling it.
Yeah.
You've got to let it be known when you do, but it's a balancing act because it could misrepresent and there could be lost opportunities.
That's right. Absolutely. And sometimes, you know, very rarely, believe it or not, very rarely do I end up in a situation where I have to make a decision that flies against the advice of the masses. Normally, when we make a decision or decide to go in a particular direction, there's great consensus around that.
Right. Right?
And so I take great comfort in that. There are a few instances, though, where I have to make a really tough decision because I've spent at least what I believe to be the right amount of time thinking about what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah.
And in those instances, it is important that people see you as competent.
Well, and you've taken it under advisement. So as if you just made a decision, even though that's, I'm sure you have to make many of those, boom, on the spot every day.
My team can tell you that our weekly meeting agendas are primarily full of things that Jason doesn't quite know what to do about.
I would say one of the, I just talked about this with a class recently, and they were getting into groups. And I shared, and it was a difficult story to share, but it was honest. I mean, the university is really about us being transparent and honest at our authentic selves, right? Yeah. We're talking about usually there's a theme every year. It happens to be about diversity, inclusion, things of that sort. Well, when I first came to the university, there was a lot of international students here in the master's program. Some of them weren't the most adept at speaking English.
Sure.
And I remember that bothered me and angered me and frustrated me sometimes because I had difficulty with group work sometimes.
Yeah.
And I saw them getting grades sometimes that I thought were close to my grades. And I knew that their paper wasn't as well written as mine, perhaps.
Right.
Or their presentation wasn't as articulate, English being my first language and not theirs. That bothered me. And I had a little chip on my shoulder about that. Mm-hmm. So how do you turn a frown upside down? Well, I realize I really suck at research and I hate it. And I also am not very good at PowerPoints and graphic design.
Yeah.
I found that my international counterparts seemed to excel in those areas, perhaps because English was not their first language.
Yeah.
So I proposed to my first group that I worked with where I was really struggling. Like it was a conflict. They wanted to kick me out. Dare them. And I said, how about you guys take this part of the project, research, design?
Yeah.
You'll still have to do your written part, but I'm going to polish it.
Sure.
And reinterpret. And I'll do all the presentations.
Yeah.
A plus that course.
Yeah.
And that could have gone a very different direction. So I learned to sort of go, what was my deficit? How could I use people around me that had strengths? And I was overcome. I wouldn't say it was a prejudice. I was able to overcome an obstacle.
That's right. And that's how lucky I was to walk into a team that was already fitting together a little bit like a puzzle. And there was a clear missing piece. And I was able to be that piece. But the other pieces of the puzzle, I mean, the differences in the jobs, even just of my assistant and associate deans, because they're all plugging different holes, is why it works.
Interesting. Yeah. I've been thinking about this question, wanting to ask you and go into this, because one, I can personally relate to it, but two, I think that it's a question a lot of people will have. We'll find out in a minute, and probably for responses we get from this topic. You mentioned several times that you're not a trained chef. And you're the dean of a culinary school. How dare you?
Right.
Right?
Right.
Now, I say this with a complete agenda of things to talk about and my feelings about this, but I want to ask you first.
Yeah.
What does knowing that mm-hmm. play a part in your mind or others in your opinion?
Sure. So I really can't speak to whether there are people on my team, faculty or otherwise, who continue to see that as an issue of credibility in the decisions I make in the job. I don't know whether that's still a thing or if it ever was a major thing. You'd have to ask them.
Okay.
For me, what's important is that even though that is not how I'm trained, I have incredible respect for it
mm-hmm.
and respect for how important those disciplines are to everybody's quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, take food and hospitality out of the life equation. The joy
mm-hmm.
that has disappeared because of that. So that's a starting point. If I didn't have respect for the value of what we're teaching students, this would not work, and everybody around me would smell it from a mile away.
Right.
And I worked in a context like that in New York, where a leader at an institution came in with no background in what the college was actually really doing or known for. And
okay.
It's okay, but that person also clearly did not respect or value what we were doing. And that's just not going to work.
That's very different than what we're talking about, because he didn't for the overall scope, the large picture.
Yeah.
We're talking about a specific segment within a job description or a specific
sure.
segment within a department that you're in charge of.
Sure.
That's very different than not getting the whole
correct
kind of.
But it just means, though, that if with the starting point that I innately see value in what we're teaching students to do, it means then that my lack of knowledge of that mm-hmm. piece of the industry, my yep. lack of technical skill,
yep.
just doubles the admiration that I have for my faculty and students who do. Yep. There is no egotistical back and forth between me and my faculty, because I'm not in any way coming from a starting point that I'm better at what they do than they are.
Right. So that's your premise from the beginning. So therefore, it reduces this one item.
That's
completely.
Right. It does, because I am hungry to learn
right.
about what they do. I'm a foodie.
They must love teaching the dean. They must love when I want to show you how to do
course.
Something to students, right?
I'm a foodie. Yeah. I love cooking. The number of times that I'll actually cook something for dinner and bring a sample of it in the day after
yeah.
for at least one of my assistant deans to try and tell me what I did wrong. I love that.
You got balls. I got to tell you.
Well, but it's,
yeah, you bring that in.
It's fundamentally changed
wow.
the way I cook. There are things that I do now in the kitchen
yeah.
that I didn't do 2.5 years ago because I didn't know to do them.
Right.
Yeah.
So I ask you this question because I've been faced with it in front of a classroom and it has been a source of insecurity for me.
Sure.
Aggravation. And I feel like I'm the 13-year-old kid wanting to fit in sometimes. And maybe I'm going to get picked last on the dodgeball team
yeah.
because I don't have that qualification behind me. That's one. And also the PhD element of it.
Sure.
Do you have a PhD?
I do.
Damn it, Chase.
Yeah, but you know what, though? So, to be honest, I got a PhD because I, by the time I finished a master's degree, still had no idea in the world what I was going to do for a living.
Yeah.
So my advisor talked me into hanging around for another couple of years or 3 years. And it was a great decision because I might have mentioned last time, if I hadn't stayed around for a PhD, I would not have had the experience of teaching my own class of undergraduates.
Yeah.
Day one, walking into the classroom teaching undergraduates, my question about what I was going to do for a living was answered.
You said that made that clear.
Day one.
The first time you said right away, you knew that this is my path.
Yep.
I actually have the quote.
I had never felt that way.
Yep.
Ever. But I understand what you're saying, though, that this, you question your own credibility, not just as a dean, but as a teacher, as a professor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I lived it really my entire life. I taught at an agricultural college.
There
and
you
some
go.
Of my, some of my students came from ginormous family farms,
very yes.
sophisticated operations. But you know what I did, though?
What?
I spent a decade networking with those people.
Yep.
really embedding wherever I could in their operations, in their businesses, and understanding them from their perspective. So even though I never ran one of those things, I know how they work.
Yes.
Because I took the time to understand it.
So, simplest question in the world.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes the most difficult for me.
Yeah.
When you're in a kitchen environment, which I'm sure you're in, you're observing, you're watching, you're talking to faculty, whether in our job, I'm sure. Have you been called chef?
Oh, yes.
How do you deal with that?
I love it. I love it because...
Teach me about this.
Yeah. Please. So for me, when I'm called chef, it's an artifact of the yes, chef culture in kitchens. And I think that when they call me that, and sometimes more often than not, it's students.
Yeah.
It's out of respect.
Yes, it is.
Right? That I'm walking by in the hallway, I'm seeing them saying hello, and it's a yes, chef moment for them because they see somebody that of authority.
Right.
They've learned to respect authority in that kitchen environment.
Yeah.
And the chef moniker just happens to come along with it.
So what is there a proper etiquette, might I ask you?
In referring to me?
No, anybody that is in an instructor mode or in in a higher administrative mode, or somebody that's in an environment where there's kitchen and culinary happening around them, and they're in a point of authority.
Yeah,
is there? What is the rule of thumb? What's the etiquette here?
There is. First of all, because the kitchen can be a chaotic environment, there can be no equivocation in your response to a question from whomever the head chef is.
Okay.
And in our circumstance, the head chef is the faculty member, right?
Yes.
So if the faculty member asks a question or asks the student or student group to do something, it is plainly and simply, yes, chef.
Yep.
Sometimes we, chef.
Yep.
But there's none of this, I'm on it, or okay, or it is an unequivocal, you've asked me to do something.
Right.
And I'm letting you know that I'm on it and I'm doing it. I actually, when I first got here, because it's so different than what happens in an academic classroom, my background, I got to tell you, I don't know. I really don't know what I thought about it, that cultural piece of it. I've just come to appreciate it so much because it means that even if these students walk out into the work world and they never work in a kitchen again, there's a yes chef mentality that until the day their boss is going to actually ask things of them and ask them to do things. That's the nature of work, right? And if the starting point for our graduates is yes chef, boy, I think that solves a lot of problems.
Well, Dean Evans, you might be pleased to know.
Yeah.
I did a little research on this prior to asking you the question.
Oh, good.
Damn it, I thought I was going to be able to set you up on this one. No, I really did. I wanted to get your opinion one way or another.
Yeah.
But I had spoke to another very respected member of my team who is, because I work with, Nick's a trained chef. I mean, geez, I work with plenty of them. And they had said if you're in a position of authority, particularly if you're in charge, then you can be referred to as chef, even though you might not have the official training that says you're a chef.
Right.
And see, it's the backstory. It means a lot. Like your backstory. What's the hot topics today? Sustainability, local, outsourcing, right?
Food systems.
Food systems. This is the environment you can. You're taking something that was probably not popular in terms of trending.
Yeah.
And now is one of the hottest trends going and it's serving you well.
Yeah.
My dad was a chef.
Yeah.
Literally. My mother was a waitress.
Yeah.
My brother worked as a server, and my sister worked at McDonald's. I remember that all growing up.
That's great.
My relationship with my father is built on food.
Yeah.
He would cook in the kitchen the few times he was at home at night. It was usually on Saturday, Sunday, during the day. We talked about life.
Yeah.
We talked about dad's son stuff.
Yeah.
While we were cooking, and he was showing me how to peel an onion.
Yeah.
How to dice. How to get the proper size of the dice. He was teaching me standardized recipes without calling it that.
Yeah.
So my relationship with my father is deeply rooted in food.
Sure.
And I love to cook.
Right.
But that's one of the reasons why I didn't become a chef, because I didn't want it to be work for me.
That's actually a really great point. And it's probably the same reason that if I have a little bit of downtime on a Saturday morning, I'll watch live cattle auctions on YouTube. I'm not doing that for a living.
Send me a link, please.
But if that's seriously YouTube. Okay. It's an immediate connection with my dad. It's something I really enjoyed learning about, but I don't want to turn it into something I enjoy less.
Right.
Because it becomes work.
You know, and not to continue to belabor this, but a lot of the things with my father resonated when you were speaking with my father.
Yeah.
That you had with your father. And a lot of the class lessons I tell kids, you know, I just had this conversation. I was sitting in one of the restaurants we own two nights ago. And I was doing some work at the bar and just observing the night. And I hadn't been in the restaurant for like a lengthy period of time and just sat and observed the night for a year or two. You
know? Yeah.
Because I have an office downstairs. And anyway, I had a really in-depth conversation with the general manager who's been with us forever. And I realized, first of all, that he wasn't using the language and the vernacular that we use in higher academic, academics. Mm-hmm. But he was telling me about menu mix, right? What's popular, what's not profitable, how he wants to sell more of these, get the staff to sell. He was speaking on a higher academic level, not even knowing he was doing it.
Sure.
Right? So I had real respect for him. But I forgot where I was going with this.
Well,
I can't believe it. This was such an important topic. I just went off track here.
I'll land the plane
for
you.
Okay, please do. Thank you, boss. Thank you, co-pilot.
Yeah, so luckily, because I've always tried to embed in these industries that my teaching job touches, like agriculture and now restaurant management and food and being a chef, I have met 1,000 people like what you're describing, which is they don't have any formal credentialing, no advanced training in what they're doing, but they know how to do it because they do it every day. That's why I think branding Johnson Wales as really as a practitioner faculty, a practitioner university.
Yeah, you talked about that.
It maybe isn't because that 100% of our faculty have been in industry, but it's because what they do in the classroom is in some way informed by it, right?
Thank you, co-pilot, because that's exactly what I was trying to go with.
Oh, good.
To say that I learned a lot of these experience things that I'm teaching in a classroom now before I ever got the proper education.
For sure.
And, you know, I could relate this to, not to go continue to beat the dead horse, but with not having a PhD.
Yeah.
You know, in my last, we have year-end reviews here, folks, just like you, whether you know it or not, you do, where you meet with your dean, you meet with your chair, and you kind of go, okay, what were your goals for the year? What did you accomplish, faculty? What didn't you? And, you know, we have some pretty honest, transparent conversations in those meetings. And, you know, I was like, I'm not getting a terminal degree, you know, but I'm turning, what, 60 years old today, right? 60. It would make sense for me.
You look great, by
the way. Thank you, dude.
Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah, I was taken aback by that when you said it was your 60th birthday.
Well, you just keep going anytime you want.
Good for you.
Thank you. But, you know, it wouldn't make sense for me to do that.
Right.
But I feel like I can run circles around certain colleagues that have PhDs in terms of talking about real life industry stuff because maybe they haven't worked in the industry like I have or currently aren't. But they can run circles around me with the academic element of it. Structuring class content, curriculum, things that I don't feel comfortable with. So it's that situation.
Yeah.
They have certain strengths. I have certain strengths. I think we both bring them to the table. And that ends in a good result for the student. And in my own mind, I can have peace.
For sure.
That.
Well, I can tell you, if it makes you feel any better, 0% of my day is informed by the content that I learned in my PhD program. I mean, it's at that level for ag economics, it's just calculus. So it doesn't in any way inform my every day. What that did for me, just like somebody's really intense work experience would, is just build confidence. And so I left that program, if nothing else, thinking, if I really put my mind to learning something, I can learn it.
Yeah.
And I can hang. I think it's really important in life to get to a point where wherever you're working or whatever you're doing, you've done enough and you've learned enough to you get to the point that you can say, you know what? I can hang. And sometimes
you have found your people. Have you found your people?
I've found, many times over.
Yeah.
And you had to work at it sometimes. Mm-hmm. And if you walk into a situation not confident of your training or your skill set, well, that just means you work a little harder, right?
Right.
And it may take you till you're in your 40s. I really try to impress that upon these 20-year-olds. some of what you're trying to figure out about life, you're not going to get it until you're maybe twice your age right now. And that's okay. That's where, that's why everybody works, you know?
Jason Evans, if I could hug you now, I could, but I've got microphones, I got stands, I got props, I got everything else going here.
Technologically impossible to do that.
I feel guilty doing any other segments like Hosp or Not, or like we've got Foodie Fight. We've got a new game now, 20 questions. Yep, we've got a new segment we call it. It's called Who the Hell Are You?
Yeah.
And it's 20 questions. We hammer them out pretty quick.
Okay.
That I think I could do with you.
Okay.
Okay. So that being said.
Yeah.
First, let me thank you.
Of course.
For coming again.
Ton of fun.
Learned a lot about you.
Good.
Learned a lot about the university.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And somebody said, they even wrote it, our producer, in the summary for the podcast. They said, Nick and Dean reach across the aisles. And I wanted to say, what in the hell does that mean? I see us as part of the same university, and we're related at the. I mean, we're joined at the hip.
It does feel that way sometimes, though, right?
Doesn't for me, but please, I don't understand that. But I guess
it's because honestly, it's an artifact of how we capture data. We capture enrollment data, fundraising data, retention data by college, and
siloed.
It's competitive.
Okay,
right.
So that's the key.
It creates this sort of competition context that feels maybe pitted against each other sometimes. Like if you take a student, that's one less student for me.
Yep.
I've struggled with that a little bit here, and it's not just Johnson Wales. That would happen in any organization, I think. But breaking down those barriers, especially at the faculty level, where faculty are learning from each other, they're using each other for cross-disciplinary projects, for guest lecturers. True multidisciplinarity will require that happening at the grassroots, which means that middle managers have to find ways to facilitate that in those conversations.
I understood a third of what you just said.
Okay.
See, that's that higher academic language.
You have to play it back.
Okay, I will. Yeah. Okay. Right. I'm going to do that right after we leave.
Play it back.
I got the gist of what you're saying.
Okay.
But yeah, those are the kind of things that sometimes can be insecure for somebody that maybe isn't at some PhD level.
Would you shut up?
Okay.
Do you know what I just said? I said people know different things from other people, and they should really talk to each other sometimes.
You are daddy in there. Oh, okay. I feel better already.
Good.
Okay. So anyway, thanks for coming in.
Of course.
And so I see this as a 4-part series.
Okay.
So we're in part 2 right now.
Yeah.
So part 1 was kind of a basic introduction. We talked about CFIT in general, touched on a lot of different things. This was really about, 1, drilling down and finding out about your 50th anniversary. Because come on, that's just good fodder. It's good fun stuff. You got celebrities. You got
money,
right? You got disgruntled employees that couldn't get on the VIP list. All that's going on. You got politics going on. And then we wanted to talk a little bit about getting to know you better. And I certainly feel like we did that. Good. I mean, all my notes that I had, you know, the Appalachian boy on the farm, growing up on the farm, you know, your relationship with your dad, you jumping right into your going into your master's program. We didn't talk about your first job as a financial planner. We don't need to go there, but you cried. Made me feel good. Yeah. Felt bad and good at the same time.
Yeah.
So, we went even more than I thought. And I'm pleasant. Least surprised. Happy that we did. I think it will make a good radio. And believe me, I'll listen to this 10, 20 times this week.
Thank you.
And if I feel different, I'll just edit it.
Okay.
No, I wouldn't. So, but that all being said, can we play a game?
Yes.
Okay. So this is a new one. So guys, as you all know, for our listeners, ladies and gentlemen, we have Foodie Fight. We play often. We have Hosp or Not. We have a few new ones on tap, so we promise the next time you're in, you're going to get introduced to a new category, and I'm going to keep that secret for right now.
Okay.
But the newest one we just tried out, we tried this out with a safe handling food safety expert, and I thought this is going to fall flat. I just needed something, because, I mean, how fun is that to talk about?
Well,
it turned out it was a really good interview.
Yeah,
really good podcast. It had a lot of good fun. It was just fun.
Great.
It surprised me. So that was my way to kind of make things a little more entertaining and move quickly if they were going to be dragging and boring.
Yeah.
So that hasn't been the case with you, but. Okay. So it's called Who the Hell Are You?
Excellent.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you, give you 2 comparative items. You rapid fire.
Okay.
No time to think. And there's no in between. You got to pick one or another.
Okay.
and just say the first thing that comes out of your mind.
Okay.
Okay. Now I'm repeating the one I used with the last person.
All right.
Because, anyway, ready? Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, who the hell are you? Jason Evans? Coke or Pepsi?
Pepsi.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Chicken or fish?
Fish.
Shrimp or oysters?
Shrimp.
Potato or rice?
Oh, geez. So I don't...
Potato or rice, yeah, Jason?
Potato.
Stay in the rails.
Potato.
Okay, potato. Red Bliss or Golden?
You what now?
Red Bliss or Golden? Oh, there's the chef. You're playing on that. Red Bliss potato or Golden potato?
Oh, I see.
I just drilled into one section.
Okay, well then I'm gonna double down. A Yukon Gold. Ooh, there you go.
Look at you, fancy schmancy. Right. Spaghetti or macaroni?
Spaghetti.
Angel hair or linguine?
Linguine.
Absolute or Jack Daniels?
Absolute.
Martini or on the rocks?
Martini.
Olive or lemon twist?
Oh, lots of olives.
Okay, good. Next row. White or red?
Red.
Cabernet or Pinot Noir?
Pinot Noir.
Booth or bar?
Booth.
High top or low top?
Low top.
Front of house, back of house?
Back of house.
Big Mac, Whopper?
Whopper 100%.
Cake or pie?
Pie.
Vanilla or chocolate?
Chocolate.
Fast food or family style?
Family style.
Province town or Providence?
Oh, neither. I guess Providence.
Federal Hill, Fox Point?
Honestly, Federal Hill.
Cannoli or tiramisu?
Cannoli.
Godfather 1 or Godfather 2?
Two.
Pacino or De Niro?
A Pacino.
Nick or Dean?
I don't know. Nick has a soft side about him that I really appreciate. but I feel like you and I have spent more time together, and so naturally it's Dean.
You rock, man.
Oh.
And here's a little gift, a little departing gift. Just hot off the press. You're the first one to get one of these. Been waiting for weeks. You ready?
Is it a sticker?
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
Nice sticker, right?
That's awesome.
Want to just tell the audience, our listeners, what they just got?
It's a sticker with a bearded fellow on it and another bearded fellow who's clearly embarrassed by what the first bearded fellow is saying.
So you can figure who's who.
Right.
And it's hospitable with Nick and Dean with a nice little barcode.
People that's awesome. Just sort
of, not a barcode. It's a QR code.
Thank you. Yeah.
I don't have
that
a
looks
PhD.
Great.
So, yes, you take a little picture of that, and you're going to start seeing those everywhere. Like,
great.
I'm a gorilla, like an old school gorilla marketing guy.
You're going to
see those in so many places. Believe me, I'll be called in the deeds office.
Excellent.
From the maintenance department.
Well, hopefully it gets me noticed.
You're the first one to get one. Jason Evans, you rock. We love you. Best of luck.
Thank you.
Can we see you before break?
Yes, of
within another month.
Yeah, send me an email to which I will immediately respond.
Oh, well, we'll see. We'll be clocking that one. Okay, Jason Evans, thanks for coming, everybody. Thanks for listening to Hospitable with Nick and Dean, or Dean and Dean. That's what we have today. We are season 3, episode 7. Next week, we have chairperson Michael Sabatoni. Do you know him, Jason?
No.
We sat at the same table.
Yes, I do.
My boss... the Dean of College of Hospitality, Food and Beverage Management, and Travel and Tourism. I got to tell you, and I'm not saying this because I'm on the air.
Yeah.
Respect.
No, me too.
Respect and like.
He's kind of a fun guy.
He's fun.
Yeah.
Knowledgeable, old school Italian guy, hardworking.
Yeah.
Sort
of true blue Jay Woo.
He's a man, he's a Jay Woo guy. But I gotta tell you, he is one of the hardest working guys I know. And this comes back to a point you talked about, your dad embedded in you. Now you and your dad needed to get on the same page you needed to speak a language of work that he understood.
Correct.
To make that connection.
That's right.
Which you did.
Yep.
I'm sad to say my father never got to see that.
Yeah.
You know, in me.
Yeah.
But I'm sure I'd be proud, you know, and I think it plays a part. Michael's not much older, isn't he? Michael Sabatoni is not much older than I am, but he has a fatherly way about him.
Yeah, I see that.
And I trust him implicitly.
Yes.
And he's made it okay to be a really good follower.
That's great.
And this is a language I would never use. That would be considered weak, yeah. emasculating,
not
and
least.
Not something that I could even understand before. But for there to be great leaders, you need good followers.
That's right.
And I'm a really good follower.
Yeah, that's awesome. No, I really like working with Michael a lot. The only complaint I have with Michael is that he has a tendency to be a telephone person and not an email person.
Oh, come on, Jason. Come on. Really? You're giving that up, man?
And nothing. I get great anxiety answering the telephone.
Well, yeah, I know he's a telephone person. But so Michael Tabatelli is going to be on next week, and he's just back from a couple big conferences.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's going to give us a state of the industry. Good. Nick and I tend to talk about it from our lens.
Yeah.
This guy's coming with the facts, the figures.
Yeah,
national awesome. Conferences, National Rifle Restaurant Association. And the Rhode Island Hospitality has got some stats on what's going on in this industry, and he's going to share them with us.
I might even listen.
Hey. You bet. I thought you were one of our new fans.
I knew that would throw you
off. Let me ask you this before I send you on your way.
Yeah.
Have you listened to your episode yet?
I have, you actually.
You did? I did. What were your takeaways?
So my takeaways is, first of all, that you guys really know how to do this. I mean, it's a professionally manicured podcast. Like it sounds like it's supposed to sound. It's really high energy. You ask great questions. And I felt like I got to talk about what I would like to talk about in things like this. So it was great.
And this will segue nicely into something I want to share with the audience as well before we say goodbye finally. It's just hard to let. See, I don't want to let you go. Can't you feel this? It's hard to let you go. So we're getting some action and some traction and some play with comments about the podcast. People reviewing the podcast.
Oh, excellent.
We're getting questions for the hosts.
Yeah.
Comments about shows, Instagram,
yeah,
et cetera. We're going to add that as a segment. We're going to start reading.
Oh, good.
Like Nick will get a question. Nick, a viewer or a listener, sorry. Listener has a question for you. Boom.
Yeah.
That's going to start as a regular part of the program.
That's great.
Starting next episode.
That's great. And the bad comes with the good on something like that. So I'm super.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm super interested in what people might be posting on,
I'm picking the bad
Instagram.
For Nick first. They're going to be all the ones for the bad. And of course, mine will be all the good. See that? Easy. All right, everybody. We'll see you later. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Hospitable with Nick and Dean. Bye, Jason.
Bye.